spending money specifically with black businesses is a way to put money in people's pockets that have been historically marginalized and disenfranchised.
A local Black History Month event remembers the past by encouraging action today. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Andrew Sellers.
And I'm Raina Drake. Also this week, as name, image, and likeness reshapes college athletics, some players in less prominent sports are building their own brands. North Carolina is in a severe drought, and this month's rain and snow isn't helping much. And the triangle rings in the year of the Fire Horse with Lunar New Year celebrations.
It's a really good way, especially for me, who never really had that growing up, to be able to experience truly the culture that my parents experienced.
From the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media, this is Carolina Connection.
Thanks for joining us. The next time you see an ambulance, it might look and sound different. Wake County has joined dozens of other communities around the country by reducing its use of lights and sirens. In 2025, there were 21 accidents involving EMS vehicles. The Wake County Department of Emergency Medical Services hopes this initiative will reduce that number. Maddie Policastro reports.
On a slow afternoon at the Wake County Department of Emergency Medical Services, paramedic Maris Jacobson sits by her truck, waiting for a call.
Watch your step.
The truck is filled with the usual sights and sounds of an EMS vehicle.
So all the ambulances carry very similar equipment. We've all got these two bags, the oxygen and the monitor, and then we've got cold fluids and just some extra stuff in the back.
And of course, the most familiar features of an ambulance, the lights and sirens.
There you go. I don't think more than that is probably safe for your hearing.
However, this may soon be a rare sight and sound. The Wake County EMS department is reducing its use of lights and sirens, and it will speed to calls only when paramedics need to get there in a hurry.
Today, about 80% of responses in Wake County get a lights and sirens response, and only about 10% of 911 calls require a critical life-saving intervention.
EMS Director John Studnick says 911 dispatchers are now training to ask specific questions to determine whether to rush to a call with lights and sirens or drive at normal speeds without them. Studnick hopes that will reduce ambulance accidents.
And if we're responding to a call with our red lights and sirens on, in which there is not a time-critical intervention to be performed, why would we want to put the public at risk as well?
Wake County is one of dozens of EMS agencies around the country re-examining their lights and sirens use. Dr. Jeff Jarvis of the Lights and Sirens Collaborative says ambulance crashes nationally resulted in 64 civilian deaths and more than 200 injuries from 1996 to 2012. The collaborative has helped 50 agencies change their policies.
Most of the reasons people call 911, they have legitimate needs, but they don't necessarily need to incur the risk of everybody that's driving on the road to get there 2 to 3 minutes faster, if at all.
Some Wake County residents, however, are skeptical of the new plan. Retired Raleigh police officer Pete Giambattista is worried calls might be miscategorized, leaving people without the quick medical response they need.
If you're worried about wrecks, I mean, that's just the cost of doing business, unfortunately.
And County Commissioner Vicki Adamson says despite the statistics, citizens who call an ambulance expect it to arrive quickly.
You know, if I'm the loved one and my person's fallen down the stairs and broke their leg and they're in terrible pain, I'm at the front door wondering where you're at.
Jeff Jarvis of the Lights and Sirens Collaborative concedes that people associate EMTs with heroic speed and urgency.
Station 51, child trapped in excavation site.
A perception popularized on TV shows dating back to the 1970s.
No one faces any crisis alone, not when these people are around. Team from Emergency.
For the past 40 years, we have very effectively communicated that no matter what problem you have, if it's even vaguely medical, call 911 and we will be there and we will solve the problem. So shows like Emergency, I think we have been a little too effective at getting this message across.
No.
Back at the Wake County EMS department, officials assure residents that they'll monitor the new policy to see how well it's working. Once they fully implement it by March or April, they are confident people will see that ambulances don't have to be fast and loud. In Raleigh, I'm Maddie Policastro.
North Carolina has reported 279 flu-related deaths so far this season. Experts say cases are more numerous and severe because some people are hesitant to get vaccinated. Anthony Guerra Flores spoke to a student who's still recovering from the flu.
Earlier this month in the Coker Arboretum at UNC Chapel Hill, Ash Odom shoveled the excess ice that covered many of the paths. Odom has just recovered from the flu and said its effects held her back.
I missed an entire week of work, so three shifts and an entire week of classes, which I'm taking 17 credit hours, so that was a lot. I'm still definitely behind on readings, but I feel like I'm still like just on time and not able to get ahead at all, like I usually would try to do.
Odom mentioned the mental toll it had on her. She couldn't focus on classes, she remained indoors for an entire week, and she couldn't secure a university-excused absence due to UNC policy considering the flu a minor illness.
So I kind of forced myself to keep going because I feel like if I stop, I'm not going to be able to keep going like the same way I was before. But walking around and stuff, I for sure feel like the difference between like before winter break to after winter break. Just walking to classes, like I get there and I'm like, oh God.
At UNC Hospitals, Medical Director for the Department of Infection Prevention, Dr. David Weber, says after the decline of preventative measures post-pandemic, flu cases have the potential to surge.
Last year and this year, I think we will see more serious cases of flu than we did certainly during the pandemic, which is not surprising. People stayed home, wore masks, and masks to protect you not only against COVID, but they protect you against influenza and all the viral respiratory illnesses.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reduced childhood immunization schedules to only include 11 of the 17 recommended vaccines, influenza being one vaccine they removed. According to the data from the National Immunization Survey, approximately 20% of parents in North Carolina are vaccine hesitant. Dr. Weber says this hesitancy results in less coverage.
This, of course, leads to higher cases and higher serious events. Certainly, we've seen, coming from the federal government, a number of statements suggesting harms from vaccines that have never been proven, such as autism, and or that natural immunity is better than vaccine immunity. Neither of which is necessarily true.
Which results in serious consequences.
We're talking about more than 100,000 hospitalizations, thousands of deaths every year. It is respiratory diseases and illness with their associated mortality remain in the top 10 causes of death in the United States. So it is a serious problem.
When we were walking into Arboretum, Odom told me she stocked up on her essentials for battling against symptoms.
Yeah, I got a bunch of Tylenol and ibuprofen before the snow came. But I also stocked up on like bread and milk and just the normal North Carolina winter weather panic essentials.
She said being able to get back into fresh air helped.
I live right next to the Arboretum, so taking walks a lot in here has been nice, more than I would usually, I think. But getting the fresh air is really nice, and just being able to see people in kind of an open environment, not worry about getting them sick or them getting me sick again or anything, is nice.
And being able to work and shovel had proven she'd recovered. She is now working ahead and catching up with friends now that the weather has lightened up. In Chapel Hill, I'm Anthony Guerra Flores.
It's week three of Black History Month, and the town of Carrboro helped organize a community spend week, which encourages residents to support Black-owned businesses. Carolina Connections' Alice Scott has more.
Mondays are typically slow at the Flying Pierogi Delicatessen, a European-inspired bistro located just off South Greensboro Street in Carrboro. But this week, the energy in the restaurant was different.
I'm also in the kitchen, so for us, it's just, you know, trying to knock out tickets as fast as we can. So, you know, it's just being busy, and, you know, that's kind of like what we like to see, is just having a full restaurant and having orders coming through.
That was Jason Wilson, the owner of the Flying Pierogi. The reason Wilson saw an influx of Monday lunch customers is because his restaurant was the site of an event that kicked off Carrboro's first ever Community Spend Week, a program designed to encourage residents to support local Black-owned businesses.
You know, any extra bodies coming through the door helps.
The Community Spend Week was put on through a partnership with the Town of Carrboro, the Chamber for Greater Chapel Hill Carrboro, and the Black Business Alliance. The week involved events at three different local businesses, including the Flying Pierogi, Tanya's Cookies, and Carolina Car Wash. Jason Merrill, a Carrboro Town Council member, said participating in the events allows residents to put their values into action. Racial equity, he says, is one of the twin pillars that guide the town's comprehensive plan.
Spending money specifically with Black businesses is a way to put money in people's pockets that have been historically marginalized and disenfranchised. You know, it's far short from reparations, obviously, but it's a little way to do that. And the nice thing is, it's a way to do that that's benefiting the business owner themselves, and it's benefiting you.
At the Flying Pierogi, the Chamber's business success navigator, Taylor Gay, greeted customers and shared information about the different Community Spend Week events.
And then for the rest of the week, we'll be at Tanya's Cookies on Wednesday.
Oh, cookies.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Her baked goods are amazing.
They're so good.
According to Gay, Community Spend Week was modeled after a form of support called cash mobs, which encourage local spending through small individual purchases.
The closest historical element that I'm thinking of is Black Wall Street in Durham. That's an example of what we're trying to capture here, which is if you care, if you want to spend your dollars with a Black-owned business and support in the community, you can. And it's really about the economic multiplying power.
Throughout the week, Gay also passed out bingo sheets that encouraged customers to visit other Black-owned businesses that weren't being highlighted with the designated event. Carrboro resident Mars Baer says this encourages people to patronize businesses they might otherwise be unfamiliar with.
I think people can kind of get into a little bit of a rut with where they go and get lunch, especially with like how baked in some businesses are in town. And this one is really a little bit out of the way, and to get people to come out here to keep this place open would be an awesome thing to continue to do because we need places like this.
Gay says she hopes the Community Spend Week will become an annual program. In future iterations, she'd like to see the event expanded to highlight a wider range of establishments with digital spending opportunities for residents who don't have time to visit businesses in person. In Carrboro, I'm Alice Scott.
At UNC, Name, Image, and Likeness, or NIL, is reshaping what it means to be a student athlete. As NIL continues to evolve, women in non-revenue sports are finding that success in the marketplace often depends less on performance and more on the personal brands they build online. Zoe Barrett reports.
Since the NCAA introduced name, image, and likeness policies in 2021, college athletes have been able to profit off of their personal brands. But the opportunities don't look the same across all sports, especially in women's non-revenue sports. At UNC, athletes like rower Gabby Postiglione are navigating NIL in very different ways. For Postiglione, NIL isn't even a major factor in our athletic experience.
So I'm on the rowing team, and NIL is not very popular with the rowing team just because I think as a sport, it's not really approached or thought of as one that would be a big moneymaker for things like that.
Rowing receives limited media coverage compared to other collegiate sports, which Postiglione says directly impacts brand interest.
I think everybody has an equal opportunity when going into it. I think it has to do more with your following and like your potential to generate like brand growth for them.
Meanwhile, volleyball player Safi Hampton has taken a more hands-on approach, building her NIL presence by reaching out to brands herself.
I was mostly just reaching out to brands that I genuinely like. Advertising is most effective when it's most legitimate and authentic.
Hampton has deals with several brands, and she posts videos on her social media pages promoting products.
Volleyball season's back, and if there's one thing that got me through preseason, it's Drip Drop. Recovery is huge. That's why Drip Drop's part of my routine.
I choose Hampton Drip Drop says her personal brand has been built more off of her interest and personality than her identity as a collegiate volleyball player.
Especially my other teammates, you know, who don't have such a big presence on social media for whatever reason, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that there could be more.
Hampton posts her videos on Instagram, where she has about 5,000 followers. Meanwhile, track and field athlete Delea Martins has seen a different side of NIL. With more than 10,000 followers on both TikTok and Instagram and multiple brand deals.
I was pleasantly surprised at like the end of 2025 seeing how much money I made through NIL because track is like a non-revenue sport.
A national organization that tracks NIL deals found that the average one last year was worth about $9,500. Martins, who has had at least 10 deals, says consistency, not necessarily performance, has driven her success.
What's cool about NIL also is that it really does not matter about talent level in your sport. Like, you could be an injured athlete, you could be a medically retired athlete, and you can still gain money from NIL by just being consistent and posting a lot. And having a little niche brand, I think that makes it super fun and creative.
As NIL continues to evolve, athletes in non-revenue women's sports are learning that marketability may depend less on what happens in competition and more on what happens online. In Chapel Hill, I'm Zoe Barrett.
North Carolina is currently experiencing a statewide drought, as well as warmer temperatures. I think it's safe to say North Carolina weather can be a little unpredictable, so we're teaming up with NC State University's meteorology program to see what this week's weather has in store. We're joined by meteorologist Wayne Johnson. Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we're currently experiencing a drought. What does that look like?
We in the Triangle have recently reached the severe drought threshold. Even though that seems very extreme, it's actually only level 2 of 4, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. That actually may be a little surprising, considering we've had a lot of snow recently, so you'd think that the snow we got should have helped with that, especially if this drought has been around since mid-August. But it was extremely cold when we got that snow, so it was a really dry snow. We usually have a rule of thumb that 10 inches of snow is roughly 1 inch of rainfall. But when that dry, cold snow happens, it's actually a lot higher of a ratio. So really 20 inches of snow of the snowfall we got is only equal to about 1 inch of rain. So there wasn't a lot of moisture in that snow in the grand scheme of things.
So my weather app is saying that it's going to rain today and Sunday.
We're going to see more substantial rain throughout this weekend, and hopefully it'll help with the drought a little bit. Sunday in particular is going to be a washout for pretty much all of us here in the Triangle. We're going to see a low pressure system develop over the Carolinas and bring in those rainy conditions for us throughout the day. So expect to see pretty steady rain throughout most of the day into at least the early evening here in Chapel Hill.
Is that going to be enough to change the drought conditions?
Well, it certainly can help. And especially since we just reached the severe threshold, it's going to bring us at least a little bit of relief. But it's pretty much putting a Band-Aid on a pretty big wound. We are 3 inches below average for this time of year. By this point in February here in central North Carolina, we should have expected about 5 inches of precipitation, and we're really only at like 2, 2.5. And we're not forecasting more than really 1/2 inch of rain for most places on Sunday. So it's going to help us catch up a little bit, but we still have a long ways to go to be on par for what we'd expect at this point in the year precipitation-wise.
So is it too soon to look ahead to the spring and summer? Are these the kind of conditions that could lead to watering restrictions and keep people from watering their gardens?
When we look at the long-term outlook, so beyond just the next season and kind of going into the yearly time scale, North Carolina is still projected to be a bit drier, but it's not like the severe drought conditions that we're seeing in the short term. So I wouldn't worry too much just yet. If these drier conditions do persist, though, we may see those watering restrictions start to be imposed on local scales.
Once again, that was meteorologist Wayne Johnson. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Carolina Connection, the weekly student newscast from UNC's Hussman School of Journalism and Media. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Andrew Sellers. Tuesday marked the beginning of the 15-day celebration of Lunar New Year. It's now the year of the Fire Horse, and celebrations are underway in the Triangle. Here's Lauren Mallett with more.
On Sunday, UNC's Chinese Undergraduate Students Association hosted their annual Chinese New Year banquet, where they served traditional New Year food from spring rolls to steamed pork dumplings and held performances from local singers, dancers, and other performers. At the banquet, students said events like this are important for highlighting diversity on campus and for bringing the student community together. One student, Tommy Lin, says that growing up in a predominantly white area makes finding community and celebrating together on campus that much more meaningful.
The best part of being able to celebrate Chinese New Year here is that you're able to come together with people that are like-minded, people that are, you know, in your culture, aligned with your goals, your perspectives, and kind of how you grew up. And it's a really good way, especially for me, who never really had that growing up, to be able to experience truly the culture that my parents experienced. And it just feels like it's a part of my culture, it's who I am, and I'm able to explore that for the first time.
Another student, Raina Du, is an international student from China.
She says celebrating on campus with friends is a fun way to engage in Chinese New Year festivities, even while she's so far from home.
Studying abroad, being an international student, I think like that like element of like festive is lacking. And then, but then here we're celebrating Chinese New Year on campus. And I think it's pretty cool. So yeah, with my friends, even though not family, it's still pretty cool.
President of the Triangle Area Chinese American Association, Michael Huang, says the organization is gearing up for a huge celebration at Dorton Arena in Raleigh on Saturday, March 14th. Attendees can look forward to events for all ages, including festive food, live performances, and, for the first time at the annual celebration, a mahjong competition.
If you have been there before, this year we create more excitement to it. You never been there, please come join us so you can understand how we actually celebrate Lunar New Year's. And I'm sure that you will have a lot of fun.
Looking into the new year, Chinese astrology predicts a year filled with energy and change, as the horse represents freedom and progress, and the fire represents passion and transformation in the Chinese zodiac. Lunar New Year celebrations close with the Lantern Festival on March 3rd. In Chapel Hill, I'm Lauren Mallett.
On the latest edition of Carolina Connections podcast, Carolina Cast, we hear from former MPSO frontman Joseph Terrell. His solo song, Genuine American Hero, protests the killing of Renee Good by an immigration enforcement officer in Minneapolis.
Countrywide, he's a genuine American hero.
The track has struck a chord with nearly 4 million views on TikTok. Terrell said he didn't expect such a massive response.
I don't aspire to be a guy that sings about the news, but I do aspire to be a songwriter that writes honestly and shares what I've been thinking about in the moment.
Carolina Connection reporter Henry Nichols met Joseph Terrell in the studio to hear a live performance of Genuine American Hero. They also discussed his journey as a songwriter. To learn more about Joseph Terrell and his viral song, check out this Carolina cast at carolinaconnection.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Finally this week, a good number of UNC students wear headphones everywhere they go, including me.
Well, what do you listen to when you're wearing those headphones?
These days, I've been listening to a lot of indie folk, bands like Sunkill Moon, Bright Eyes, stuff like that. What about you? What do you listen to?
Well, I don't know any of those bands, so I guess we have pretty different taste in music. Usually when I'm wearing my headphones, I'm listening to Magdalena Bay or Tame Impala. But when I'm walking to my 9 a.m., I usually am playing something a little more hype to wake me up, like Bad Bunny.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have to listen to The Strokes to wake me up. Music that gets me hyped up. That's very helpful for my 8 a.m. To find out what other UNC students are listening to, Carolina Connection reporter Allison Helms took to the pit.
Will I see you at the show tonight?
My name is Will Choi. I'm a freshman.
And what are you listening to and why?
I'm listening to Chicago Freestyle by Drake right now. It's pretty peaceful and calming. That was just a good vibe with the weather.
My name is Scarlett Haberacker, and I'm a freshman. I'm listening to Goodbye Home Demo by the Beatles. It's my favorite song, and it's very comforting to me because my whole family loves the Beatles.
Tomorrow comes, and I will not be late.
My name is Hazen Johnson, and I'm a freshman. I'm listening to Secrets by Deep Sea Diver. One of my kind of friends, kind of acquaintances, he plays guitar. I follow him on Instagram. He posts about this band a lot. He likes them. I think like they're one of his favorite bands. And I was like, oh, I'll take a listen to this. And I've been really enjoying it.
My name is Adoze Aligwekwe, and I'm a junior. I'm listening to Love Me Again by John Newman because it's one of my favorite songs. I first heard it at the World Cup in 2014, so it's just been a core song for me for a really long time.
My name is Jessica Madron, and I'm a sophomore. I'm listening to Heavy Metal Lover by Lady Gaga. I love her so much, and her old music is just so good.
My name is Aubrey Spritzer. I'm a freshman here. So funny enough, I just pulled up my phone. I'm on the Settings app, so I'm not listening to anything yet.
That's all for this week's edition of Carolina Connection. We are a production of the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media. Our technical directors are Kevin Paris and Kalias Galbraith-Fow DeConto. I'm Raina Drake.
And I'm Andrew Sellers. You can find more of our stories on carolinaconnection.org, and you can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From everyone here at Carolina Connection, thanks for listening. Now, back to weekend programming on 97.9 The Hill.